Jhené and Gola Jr., the podcast.
We came here to break hearts and spew takes.
I have a little broken heart.
What's that?
Can you mend it?
Can I mend it?
Yes.
Oh, yeah. We can fix this. We can work.
Unbreak my heart.
Oh, no. Say you love me again.
You're the only one that can make me smile now.
We are, you know what? We all need a smile here for a second. Jhené and Gola Jr. on ESPN Radio, ESPN News. We're presented by Progressive Insurance. Callers, join us on the Shell Pennzoil Performance Line. Our thanks to Derrick Henry for joining us. He was fantastic. I wish everyone could have heard more of it.
Yeah,
it
was, I mean, they heard the meat of it.
He was awesome.
He was great. Positive, uplifting.
Humble.
Yeah.
He was everything you want, like one of the leaders on your team to be. It just,
trust us for that, okay? Yeah. Trust us.
Yeah, let us be your conduit to Derrick Henry. We were just excited about that as you were. And sometimes things happen during the course of that, but he was great. He's still going to run people over when he's on the football field, and that's all that matters. The joy is still going
to
be there.
Absolutely, and run himself up the ranks of the MVP if we have something to say about it.
Exactly, because running backs matter to this show, even if overall value relative to your team's production is not necessarily there in modern football, but that's neither here nor there. We are excited about all of those things. But, Jhené, we're excited about that because we get to keep seeing Derrick Henry do this. Obviously, the Titans have dealt with some of the difficult parts of trying to play football in the middle of a pandemic. But there is an announcement that came from our company that's a reminder of what's coming right around the corner for the world of sports. Something that we've forgotten about and something that we need to remind people is not going to get any easier as we go along. We like to do a solo something called one and done around here. Let's get to it.
So much to say.
Are you good? Like, do you need a minute to breathe? Do you need some water?
So little time.
I'm trying to balance a lot right now.
One and done.
ESPN Radio is presented by Progressive Insurance. More than 30 unique coverage options available. Progressive knows small business. Learn more at progressivecommercial.com. And Jhené, ESPN, hi, us, are canceling its plans to host 8 of men's college basketball events at one location in Orlando, Florida. ESPN had planned to move 8 of its 10 non-conference events to the wide world of sports at Walt Disney World, where the NBA had operated their bubble. This included the Champions Classic, the Charleston Classic, Myrtle Beach Invitational, the NIT season tip-off, the Wooden Legacy, the Orlando Invitational, and the Jimmy V Classic and Diamond Head Classic. They've been out of abundance of caution, like everyone else, quote, ESPN events set out to create a protect an environment for teams to participate in early season events in Orlando. Based on certain challenges surrounding testing protocols, we opted to resume those tournaments beginning in the 2021-2022 season. And Jhené, this is a good reminder as we look towards not only the upcoming NBA season that's going to have its challenges, the upcoming WNBA season, which I know you and your sister Nek are working diligently on. College basketball is not that far away, and I feel like we have a lot more questions than we do answers still for a sport that's had this long of the runway.
What I feel like we're moving towards, which people may not seem it as likely because there's still potentials for out-of-conference play, we're seeing in college football, you know, in conference play being the short runway, and this is where these guys are playing and competing for an opportunity. With little, like, we're not hearing much. I feel like it's almost like we have to be more comfortable knowing that the wait on the conference season is probably going to be the most important. Because, yeah, when these games are canceled, these are what you look forward to when it comes to preseason. And so I think the hardest thing for me to internalize is these tournaments could have been mini bubbles. And the way that the college landscape works is that I was a part of an institution, Stanford, that was very different, where women's program, where a lot of people say, this is normal for the men's. This is actually quite normal for the women's programs that are capable of flying private. You fly private, you get tested, you go to a site, everyone's there in one location, get tested, compete. I was hoping that would happen, which is why I was a little disappointed that we saw some cancellations, which is why I feel like we're putting more weight now on what you can do in your regional areas when it comes to your Pac-12 or Big Ten or ACC when it comes to hoop. So I'm putting more weight on that because I sort of felt this was coming because we haven't heard much and the season is right around the corner and there's still issues with other sports, which leads me to finally on my pulpit. Can you talk to me about the quarterback situation in Wisconsin?
Yo, I was going to say what we've got going on here. Like on the same day that Bethune-Cookman announces they're going to forego sports in the 2020 season, we do get news as we talked about yesterday. The Wisconsin Badgers quarterback, starting quarterback Graham Mertz, who went out and lit it up in game one against Illinois, has in fact tested positive for COVID-19 and will be out a minimum of 21 days. He had the PCR test that confirmed what they got in the antigen test this weekend. Now, the difficulty is third stringer Chase Wolf also tested positive per sources. Jack Cohn, their starter this week, going into this season, suffered a foot injury in the preseason that put him out. So that means redshirt junior Danny Vandenboom is expected to start against Nebraska.
Love the name.
I love the name. And in any other Chiney walk of life or version of this story, I would love the opportunity for this kid to go out there and get this done on a big stage against a Nebraska team that looked like it had made improvements against Ohio State. But this is all of the problems that we talked about playing football in a pandemic. Like you mentioned, the private plates, all the luxuries that come with money in these, those are the pro leagues. We don't have that in these spots. These are still people trying to play games on college campuses. And this is a league now that is dealing with the longer layoff time of 21 days as opposed to 14, and then on top of all of that, trying to do it in 8 weeks without any gap.
Yeah, that's tough. But again, like you said, it's hard because you have all these negativities, and the good thing is like a guy that probably wouldn't normally see the field is going to be able to see the field and play. But I guess what I wonder here is where do you think other schools are looking at that situation in Wisconsin and saying, how do we prevent this from happening to us? Because we just came off of a conversation where quarterbacks are probably the most important position, arguably, in sports. And now one team is feeling that in the worst ways possible.
Yeah, Janae, it's a great question. And it's one I think all of these programs, like we've clearly seen at this point, no amount of money or Power 5 status is going to seclude you from this, right? We're seeing more difficulties for the University of Florida and their program that's trying to get back online after having to postpone their game against LSU because of COVID-19. We mentioned Notre Dame earlier in the year had to postpone a game against Wake Forest. Like, at the end of the day, when you are outside of a bubble and you lack the ability to test at the level of a league like the NFL, you're going to have these kind of problems. And when you're operating on college campuses, these are just going to be the things that are hard to avoid. So to kind of bring it full circle back to college basketball, Chiney, you'd imagine that this is going to have to be entirely bubbles from here on out, right? That you're going to lose all this cross-conference ability to kind of measure yourself against other teams. And that could potentially hurt conferences who maybe don't have the reputation of the ACC, some of the more premier basketball conferences in the country.
How do you see that happening, though? Bubbles, even though they're still traveling for games?
I feel like it's going to have to be something more geared around the conference tournament, because we know the tail that wags the dog in this situation is the NCAA tournament, the cash cow and all of this that they lost out on. Like, the only thing college basketball knows is it can't lose that again, right? Like,
that's
we already
true.
Dealt with a disruption with the fan and the ticket gate this fall. They only know that it can't lose out on the tournaments again. That to me, Chiney, seems like, period, like the start and finish of any conversation surrounding college basketball.
You're right. The NCAA tournament is the biggest moneymaker when it comes to basketball, which is why not too long ago, a couple months ago, we were talking about how the coaches were coming together and say, everyone's invited. We just want an opportunity to go out there and compete and perform and to just make our workouts that we've been doing with masks on, with protocols, with student athletes that have also been those people making the sacrifices to leave their own homes and to do this by themselves, to make it all worth it. So it makes sense. I absolutely believe there should be a bubble scenario, which I've said before. You know, going to the NCAA tournament, you're usually in one site, one location for two games. If you win, then you move to another. Maybe they condense that so that it's more teams in one central location so you don't jeopardize the tournament. But to get to the tournament, you have to get through these bumps and bruises along the way. And I think it's good that we're preemptive in canceling games. It just is like the more bubbles, the merrier. And hopefully we see the formation of bubbles. You know, I feel like a kid with like blowing, you know, the bubbles through the
formation of bubbles. Get in formation in the worst way possible here. Chiney, is there
bubbling.
Any part of you that's surprised right now that we're dealing with these kind of uncertainties for a sport that's had this long? Now, I remember going through this with football. Like, we got to this fall and all of a sudden it seemed like, man, we're drawing up a lot of stuff in the dirt later than I expected. And for college basketball, who was at the forefront of this? Like, the ACC tournament shutting down was my intro to, oh man, stuff is getting serious with this pandemic. I'm shocked that there is not a more concrete set of, all right, if this, then that, that's not occurring right now.
Yeah, I'm kind of a little worried because sometimes you hear nothing and you're like, hopefully they've got everything figured out. And that's what we will see. Again, talking about college football, the Pac-12 has yet to play. They're going to play at the end of next week. So, yeah, I mean, hopefully we are getting the processes in place so that we can make sure there's as much testing, there as much protection. I think the student athletes need to be excluded from the students, unfortunately, so that you preserve their ability to not spread the virus if they were to get it. And then just keep that same energy as you move forward, especially in a holistic standpoint when it comes to the NCAA. So I think things are moving in a direction of play, but we don't know who is going to end up, unfortunately, like a situation where maybe your top 3 or 4 or 5 players are not playing and you're in the NCAA tournament and bam, the trajectory of your season has moved.
I will give a big shout out to Paul Chryst, the head coach of the Wisconsin Badgers, who in a statement came out and was very clear. The only thing that matters in this is the health and safety of the athletes involved. Full stop. No talk of competitive balance. No complaining about how this is going to affect their season. Only care for what happens there. It is a tremendously low bar to clear, but it is one we have to strive for nonetheless.
You know what's a result of those type of declarations and importances? Cancellation of games.
And if that if that's what it has to be, so be it. Because, again, there's one charge and one marker for success this season. It has nothing to do with what's going on the field. But coming up next, we will stick with what's on the field. It's Tuesday. You know what that means. We are through with the NFL weekend that was. It's time to rank stuff. Top 5, bottom 5 is next on Janae and Golic Jr.
Janae and Golic Jr., the podcast.
Coming up in about 10 minutes, we will talk to our fine NFL analyst, Dan Orlovsky, about what the Chicago Bears need to do going forward at the quarterback position. Because right now, going back to Mitchell Trubisky doesn't seem to be on the table, but Nick Foles certainly not getting it done. It's Chinay Golic Jr. here on ESPN Radio. Mike Golic Jr., Chinay Ogwumike, and Chinay, we're going to get to your top 5 from the NFL weekend in a second because you're a glass half full person, right? You
Absolutely.
Claim that on your show. You look at me like I'm the glass half empty person.
No, I've dubbed you as an anarchist.
Anarchist is probably the right word, but would you say we're all team players around here for the most part, Janae?
For the most part, with one exception on our staff, but okay.
I was going to say, like, we got to have this conversation. So we've been working through some technical difficulties behind the screen today, and these things come up sometimes, and we just work through it as a part of the show. And we're in break and offhand, I say, man, you know what? We got to get it together. Like, we're just collectively a little off today. And out of nowhere, the voice haymaker comes from Cliff on the board who says, speak for yourself. That ain't me.
Listen, man,
defend yourself.
I'm not a team player. I'm looking out for me only. Say the famous line from Remember the Titans.
He said, I'm supposed to put myself on the line for the team.
What team?
What team?
Exactly. I'm looking out for me and me only, baby.
Come on, Cliff.
Attitude reflect leadership. So at some point, we got to be responsible for this, Janae.
ELE Buttsy.
ELE Buttsy. Wow.
I see all this. All right, cool. Y'all got
it. Me?
Y'all got it.
You
Listen.
Can't have it both ways.
No. Y'all got it. Let's just get the top 5, bottom 5.
Let's play
the sound
while we fix our behind the scenes marital issues on the show here. Go ahead, Cliff.
Which teams were great?
Touch and tackle at the 15, 10, 5, touchdown.
What player was not?
Does he hang on? Intercepted. He couldn't hang on.
This is the NFL top 5, bottom 5.
All right, let's hit it. Number 5, Cliff.
Number 5.
Good things are going to only come because that's what I emanate, good vibes. And, you know, your girl is struggling in fantasy, but I did get one win even though I still lost. And I love seeing situations where you lose, but you're still winning. We made fun of the play that put the Falcons, you know, in the bottom 5. But, hey, when we talk about the player, I'm going to say top 5 for Todd Gurley because he still scored a touchdown. And he said he was mad as hell for something good that happened. And I just have to start with that type of positive energy because hopefully it translates over to me getting some dubs.
I appreciate how self-centered this one in the top 5 is. This is good for you and only you, Chinay. It's not good for Todd. It's not good for the Falcons. It is good for you and only you.
That's the beginning. Let's go, Cliff.
Number 4.
I think you'll like this one, though. We've been giving a lot of quarterbacks love, and I have to give number 4 to the Ohio State pun intended, quarterbacks, because you look at Joe Burrow with the Bengals. Burrow became the first rookie quarterback in NFL history to throw for 400 plus passing yards, three TDs, and score a rushing touchdown in a single game. Then you go to Baker, who had an early interception and then went for a streak of 22 for 23 for 297 yards and five touchdowns, which was what he needed in that moment so much. And then I'm going to go to Ohio State. Justin Fields, he completed 20 of 21 passes for 278 yards. So it was good for Ohio, even though like Burrow did have the loss, like all those quarterbacks showed out.
I feel like as long as Joe Burrow is performing well this year, Chinee, there are very few things that could or should upset Bengals fans.
Precisely.
Number three.
Number three.
We have to give love, and I wonder why like that sound is there. We have to give love to the Pittsburgh Steelers because they're the lone undefeated team left in the NFL. They just took down an undefeated Tennessee Titans team, which included Derrick Henry, who we just talked to, 27-24. They're getting production, and you talked about this a lot in our pre-show meeting, out of guys like James Conner and making young stars out of guys like Chase Claypool. They're the third highest scoring team at 30 points per game. They also have a stingy, what is it? Sturdy. I'm going to say sturdy. Defense sturdy. And then they have an opportunity versus the Ravens to show how good they really are. So, yeah, they're riding high.
It's amazing how many different ways the Steelers have been great during Ben Roethlisberger's tenure. Saw this courtesy of ESPN Stats and Info. Ben Roethlisberger's averaging 6.6 air yards per attempt this season. It would be the lowest through the Steelers' first six games since that stat was tracked in 2006. So shorter completions, great athletes, making for a quality offense for the
Still
Steelers.
Still getting it done. Our favorite number.
Number two.
I'm dirty. Okay, we've been talking this entire week about the best team in the NFC. And this conversation always ended up with one team, the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. And most importantly, Tom Brady, because we're in the MVP debate who gets it. And right now he's made a really good case that he's winning. He's won the divorce so far. He's looking cute to his exes. And so much so that our predecessor, our guy from the North, Max Kellerman, has been forced to apologize. He walked back his words, and now the football rich get football richer with Antonio Brown. This has been a pretty good start for Tom Brady.
If you can make anyone on First Take apologize for their take, you have done something right. Even six rings can't bring you that level of joy. All right, Cliff, what's number one?
Number one.
The play heard round the world. We have to give love to DK Metcalf chasing down Buda Baker. He reached, and I forgot who. Were we talking about Daniel Jones reaching, 21 miles per hour on his run that wasn't? Now it's 22.64 miles per hour, traveled 114.8 yards to chase down Buda Baker on his 90-yard interception return. Yeah, that's wild.
We just talked to Derrick Henry, who was the author of one of the big scary man plays heard around the world, and that stiff arm and him breaking away from opposing defenses is certainly registered on the Richter scale. This DK Metcalf play might have taken the throne for the big scary man NFL player of the year so far.
And it's crazy because you know there was no such thing as peripheral vision. Like, he just came out of nowhere. So your girl's top five things that happened in the NFL this past week. Todd Gurley, me selfishly, and my fantasy team, that's one win still. Ohio quarterbacks, Baker Mayfield, Joe Burrow, and even Justin Fields. We've got the Steelers at being undefeated at three. Tom Brady getting love for Max Kellerman. Oh, snap. And number one, DK Metcalf.
You know what? I'm glad you brought up the Ohio quarterbacks, because coming up next, I want to ask Dan Orlovsky about Baker Mayfield and what really goes into the disconnect between a major quarterback piece for a team and a star wide receiver. We'll dive into that with Dan next after this word from Mercedes-Benz Vans. Ever wonder how far an extra mile really goes? Drive a Mercedes-Benz van and find out. Start with a network of over 250 authorized dealerships backed by a sales force ready to help you with everything from customization to service. On vans like the Mercedes-Benz Sprinter, that's tailored for your lifestyle with options like blind spot assist and MBUX voice command technology for directions, weather, and more. So whether you're enjoying life on the trail or working hard on the job, see how far an extra mile can really go by taking the first step into an authorized Mercedes-Benz van dealership today. And now with IRS Section 179, businesses can be eligible for up to a $25,900 tax deduction. That's up to $5,439 in tax savings. Options and model availability may vary. See dealer for details about costs and terms. Some equipment described is optional. $5,439 tax savings based on 21% federal tax rate and eligibility to claim full $25,900 Section 179 vehicle deduction. Your tax rate and eligibility may vary. Consult your tax advisor for more information. Limits apply. Visit mbvans.com. Offer valid through December 31st, 2020. What's wrong with Baker and Odell? Next, it's Chenea and Golic Jr. on ESPN Radio.
Chenea and Golic Jr., the podcast.
Chenea and Golic Jr. here on ESPN Radio. ESPN News coming up in about 10 minutes. The bottom five from what we saw in this NFL weekend. And I think we might have our first ever instance of the same group being in the top five and the bottom five. We will tell you how that comes to be in just a second. But now we're delighted to head out to the Shell Penzoa Performance Line. We're joined by one of our great ESPN NFL analysts, Dan Orlovsky, who you can check out on NFL Live each and every day around here at 4 o'clock Eastern. And Dan, we just heard it in the intro there. We've heard so much talk about it narrative-wise in the last couple of days. Baker and Odell, why they can't seem to get along. When you cut the tape on, from a football sense, how does a star receiver and the quarterback, the franchise player for your football team, fail to get on the same page in the ways that we've seen with Baker and Odell?
Yeah, simply, Mike, it's forcing a football. You know, the way I'll break it down is this. With Odell Beckham, when Baker Mayfield gets a play call, he immediately thinks, okay, where is Odell? What's Odell's route? And then he goes to, all right, what's the play versus the defense that I have, right? When he doesn't have Odell, he gets the play call and just goes, you know, what's the play versus the defense that I have? I'm just going to execute this play. And so, like, when he has Odell, it's this thought process of, like, okay, I got, Odell has a slant. Maybe I'll throw it even though I'm not supposed to. Or Odell has a go route on the first play of the game against the Cincinnati Bengals and the corner's 11 yards off, but it's Odell on the go route, so I'm just going to throw it. Where when Odell is not with them, he's just like, oh, I've got spacing. I'm just going to work spacing. I don't care. Whoever's the guy that gets open, I'm going to throw him the football, you know? And so I experienced that a little bit with Matthew Stafford and Calvin Johnson in Detroit. Now, they had a lot more success and probably, you know, at least Calvin's as equally as talented as Odell, if not more, and Matthew's significantly more talented than Baker. So they had it working. But I experienced it with Matthew being like, yeah, but Calvin, I've got Calvin. And we'd be like, no. This play is – versus cover two, you got to run the play this way. If Calvin becomes the third option, great, but you got to work somewhere else. And so it's a difficult challenge. You got to have, like, great discipline at the quarterback spot and maturity at the quarterback spot, not to kind of fall in love with the, you know, the enticing aspect of throwing it up to Odell.
Long term, Dan, can this work with them on the same team, or is this something where the Browns need to start looking at potentially what they can get in return for Odell Beckham Jr.?
Yeah, I think it's fair to start looking into what you can get in return, because long-term, how long is it going to take, right? Like, how long is it going to take for Baker to show us that discipline and show us this maturity? And I do want to make it clear, Mike, and I think you see it this way. Like, this is not an Odell thing. Like, this is a Baker thing. No one is saying that Odell's not a ridiculously good and powerful and playmaking player. This is a Baker thing. And so I think it's a fair question because, you know, at the end of the day, we can't run from reality. Like, we can't run from what the tape shows or the numbers say. Whatever, if you're a numbers person, you're going to stand on those. And if you're a tape person like I am, you'll stand on those. And you can't run from those realities. So I think it's fair to start asking that question.
I love, Dan, when you share your personal experiences, because we are players only here with Dan Orlovsky, ESPN NFL analyst, former NFL and UConn quarterback, that school, on Chenea and Golic Jr. on ESPN Radio. Now, sticking with the quarterbacks, what did you make of the Bears' offense last night? How long, really, can this defense carry them?
I think the defense is good enough to keep them into the playoff conversation. The defense is that good. You know, like, they played a really, really good offense last night and only gave up 24 points when they were basically on the field the whole game. And so they're going to be into the playoff conversation all the way through December, just because the defense is a top five, top seven unit in the NFL. You know, there's a little bit of a unique kind of national perspective with the Bears, I guess, just so to speak, because, like, did people think that this was an explosive offense for some reason? Like, I want everyone to understand, as much as I love Nick Foles, when he went on that Super Bowl in Philly, that was a loaded football team. Like, that was a top-five defense, a top-five run game, a young Alshon Jeffrey, three really good tight ends that were young. Like, that was a really, really good team that he took on that Super Bowl run. Now, he got it done, but that was a really good team that he was on. Nick is a type of player that cannot overcome the lack of talent or X's and O's. And Matt Nagy is not good enough as a coach right now to close that talent gap. You know, like, the Bears line up like they have a top five offensive line or a top five receiving crew and a top back, and they just call plays, thinking, you know what, we'll just be good enough talent-wise, and that's what will help us execute. And Matt Nagy should be the coach that closes that talent gap, and right now he's not. Like, if you guys are what, like, go back to that game last night, and Sean McVay put on a clinic of, hey, this is what we're really good at, pre-snap motion, playing with tempo, movement outside the pocket for Jared Goff. That's all they do. Why? Because that's all they're really good at. And then what are they not good at? Like, drop back football. So you never see Sean call it. Like, that's just not – Sean would rather punt than call drop back football. And then if you watch the Bears offense play, something that they are good at is tempo. They play no huddle tempo. Nick plays it really well. They don't do it enough. Like, they were doing it at the end of the first quarter last night, and they had three straight first downs, and all they get to second and four, and they huddle up. And I'm sitting there going, why are you huddling? Like, that's not who you are. And then they get to a drive where they call a first down pass. It's sacked. It's second and 14. And all of a sudden, Matt Nagy runs the ball to get to third and nine. And then third and nine, like, you're not a drop back third and 19. You're not good enough. And so I think the offense will always be the issue this year, but the defense is good enough to carry him for a while.
Dan Orlovsky with us on Shanahan Golic Jr. on ESPN Radio and ESPN News. Dan, the other team you mentioned, that Sean McVay, this Rams outfit, looking strong again in the best division in football. As you look at this team, how do they compare with where they are and what they're capable of, what their potential is, to the team that showed up and faced the Patriots in the Super Bowl not too long ago?
Yeah, they're closer to the Super Bowl team than they are the team that we saw struggle a little bit last year, Mike. You know this well. Their offensive line was, you know, kind of a lot of moving parts last year, and they didn't play well. Their offensive line's playing a lot better this year. You know, they're very kind of diverse on offense. You know, Robert Woods is probably the most diverse wide receiver in the NFL. Not an elite wide receiver, but he's an elite football player. And, you know, Goff is playing really, really good football. They're running the ball well. And McVay is as good of a coach as there is in the NFL right now. Like, I'm confident in saying that McVay is as good a coach as that we have in the NFL. The fascinating part about their defense, and we talked about the Bears' defense a ton going into last night, as we should, but, and then we talk about Aaron Donald on the Rams. The Rams, I think, showed us last night defensively, they're bigger than just Aaron Donald. Like, Leonard Floyd was making plays. Micah Kaiser, the linebacker, is a really good player. Jalen Ramsey, they're not playing him at corner that much. Like, they're playing him as a playmaker, as a football player for their defense, and so I think their defense is bigger than just Aaron Donald. And so if you look at that division, the fascinating part is, like, Russell Wilson's got to play perfect because their defense is atrocious. Kyler Murray's got to play really, really, really well, at least in the run game, because the defense is still just okay. And then San Francisco is just they're good because Kyle's so good, but they've got 10 starters on IR. The Rams are the healthiest team. They're as good, as well coached as anyone in that division, but they're the team that has the best defense, the most reliable defense right now. And so, you know, they're a team that is going to kind of ruin someone's plans as we get into the back half of the season.
Money well spent on the defensive side of the football for them, no doubt about it. Dan, always great stuff, man. We appreciate the time and the insight. Enjoy the Bachelorette.
Thanks,
tonight.
Later, guys.
Dan Orlovsky, our great ESPN NFL analyst, joins us on the Shell Pennzoil Performance Line with the Shell V-Power Nitro Plus Premium Gasoline. All right, Shanae, it's time to hit it. The bottom five next from the NFL weekend that was. And if we stand for nothing, we're going to fall for everything. I draw a line in the sand as we approach Halloween weekend. That's next. It's Shanae and Golic Jr. on ESPN Radio.
Shanae and Golic Jr., the podcast.
I tried so hard. Hey.
See, you get singing and dancing around these parts on this show. We are not just Friday rump shaking. We are also a good bit of country on a Tuesday. It's Shanae
yes,
Golic Jr. here on ESPN Radio, ESPN News. We're presented by Progressive Insurance. Guests join us on the Shell Pennzoil Performance Line. And we're going to get to the NFL bottom five here in just a second. But Shanae, I got to ask you one simple question. Candy corn, yes or no?
No.
Oh, whoa. Oh, Nah, see.
It's not good. Candy corn is not good. It's like you eat it just because it's packed of sugar.
No, I eat it because it's delicious. And I'm telling you what, like, I'm sick and tired of the outside world looking at us like I got two heads when I say, yes, I am about candy corn. Yes, I like stale Peeps. Yes, I will support all of these outsider candies and foods that the rest of the society deems unfit because you're too afraid to live your truth in the light.
Everyone on the Dr. Pepper Twitter feed, tweet us whether you think candy corn, at Chinee, at Mike Golick Jr., whether candy corn is a good Halloween candy, if you like to eat it. Real talk. I need to know. We got to ratio this man.
Candy corn is the most flavorless, textureless candy in the Halloween repertoire. I can't believe that you like it.
Great word.
No longer friends with Devin or Christine Lisi, who's the nicest person I've ever met. She got in my ear and said something very, very mean about candy corn, and we're just not cool anymore.
Wait, Cliff, so you're with me on this?
I'm 1,000% with you. Candy corn is fire.
How about those pumpkins, too? The pumpkins
are... Do you want Cliff agreeing with you? Listen, you like Cliff agreeing with you?
Candy corn is so one note. I can't get over it.
Oh, you know what? Like, you guys and your advanced palates are so far above this right now, eating the Grey Poupon version of Halloween candy. I forgot y'all were that rich, okay? That's my mistake. I'll wander back over here with candy corn.
It's not good.
At Chinee, at Mike Golick Jr. Let's hit the bottom five.
It's
which teams were great?
Breaks a tackle at the 15, 10, 5, touchdown!
What player was not?
Does he hang on? Intercepted! He couldn't hang on!
This is the NFL Top 5, Bottom 5.
Sorry, I'm going to hijack yours, okay? At Christine Lisi says candy corn is not candy, it is sugar wax.
And? What's the problem with that? It's, you know what? You act like because you give it an ugly name, it all of a sudden tastes any less in my eyes.
It doesn't. It's exactly what it is.
Christine Lisi bakes the most incredible tweets. I trust her palate more than you.
100%.
I do, true. She's really not someone I want to go up against in this because she's probably right. Number five.
Number five.
Daniel Jones endurance. After topping out at speeds that even eclipsed the great Lamar Jackson this season, Daniel Jones still found himself gasping for life and trying to find his balance as he toppled to the turf after the 80-yard run and scamper that still didn't find him in the end zone. Chinee, one of the funniest plays that we will see this entire sports calendar.
It's funny because on that play, you win, get 80 yards, but you still lose because you didn't get to the end zone.
Oh, you did good. You tried so hard. You got so far. But in the end, it doesn't even matter. Number four. We just talked to Dan Orlovsky about it. The Chicago Bears offense, by efficiency standards, one of the worst in the NFL. But last night in particular, just failing to protect Nick Foles at quarterback. In the second half of that game, he was under duress on 56% of their dropbacks. 45% overall for the game, their highest allowed since 2017 versus the Ravens. Janae, if you don't have a quarterback that can overcome it and don't have a line that can block it, you're going to have a hard time winning football games.
Another reason why Chicago ranks 27th in points per game. You got to give him some time, and I think he got in his feelings. We heard him walk it back, but yeah, I mean, they have a rough challenge ahead.
Number three.
Tough stretch for normal human beings. Like, we watched Derrick Henry go toe-to-toe with Robert Spillane in the middle of that hole. Spillane came back in but had to sub out for the play after that because that was one of the most violent collisions on earth. We saw Buda Baker, who's not even a normal human, who is a fast, far above average human being, get walked down in the open field by DK Metcalf. It's just a reminder that some people's better is always, in fact, better than your better.
Where are Buda Baker's teammates? Because in basketball, this is what we yell. Wolf, 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 wolf. Someone's coming. Wolf, wolf, wolf. Like, come on. I would have been screaming. Oh, you know, actually, I'd be not. I'd be like, oh, shoot. There he go. He gonna get him.
Help me. Help me. And nobody came to his aid.
Number two.
I can't believe, Chinee, that you managed to put the Falcons, you put Todd Gurley into your top five for the same reasons that I'm going to have to put them in the bottom five now. The Falcons' execution in this phase of the game right now, situational awareness. We've seen special teams fail. We've seen just about every kind of fail from the Falcons. But Todd Gurley failing to get down as the Detroit Lions wanted to allow them to score. Yet another mishap to add to the list for them, and special nod to Penn State. I know they're not in the NFL, but they get partial credit here.
And we got a mad parent, you know, picture from Arthur Blank, like, yes. Hands on the hips. Like, just knowing when your kid's just disappointing you.
I can't believe they're out of candy corn at the store.
No, more like I can't believe they're eating candy corn right now.
Speaking of candy corn, number one.
Number one.
On any other list, candy corn would be near the top.
Right here. I'm hijacking this. Candy corn is absolutely in the bottom five, the number one of the week. I don't know what you're doing. No. Like, bro. No, candy corn, I've hijacked this entire thing. Nope.
This is a joke? This was
tell me what's better.
Thankfully,
tell me what's better.
I write this down because I'm a professional.
Everything.
Number one, the Dallas Cowboys. Number one in the bottom
five. That's pretty bad. That's pretty bad, too. You're right.
Of the NFL. Y'all come for candy corn? Guess who's going to be waiting to defend it? Me. Say hello to the bad guy. Coming up next, we take a look at something else related to candy corn that I forgot. It's Chinay Angola Jr. here on ESPN Radio and ESPN News.
I love you.